That was former Ambassador Michael McFaul. While I had him on the line, I also asked about another top national security story today, the leak to CNN and the New York Times that the U.S. had a spy high up in the Kremlin for years and that the spy was extracted, removed from Russia in 2017 for his safety. I asked Michael McFaul if he knew the spy.
Well, I most certainly can't talk about that. And I am really appalled at that we're talking about this at all. I just cannot understand why somebody who works with classified information would ever, ever, ever want to release that classified information. I find that to be it's not in America's national interest. It's against the law. And people who do that should not be working for the U.S. government.
The alleged spy, a Russian, apparently had access to the highest levels of government in the Kremlin. The reports also indicate this asset in the Kremlin was a source of information about Russian election meddling that prompted Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the U.S. election of 2016. Garrett Graff wrote about the investigation in the Threat Matrix inside Robert Mueller's FBI.
One of the things that has sort of always been a missing piece of the puzzle of Robert Mueller's investigation has been this line that the intelligence community had high confidence that the attack on the election had been ordered and carried out with the express instructions from Vladimir Putin himself. Yet we have never seen any evidence of that emerge in the public record. So what we've sort of always wondered is how the U.S. had such confidence that Vladimir Putin was intimately engaged in the 2016 election attack.
The alleged spy and his family were extracted from Russia in 2017 and are reportedly now living in the United States. John Schindler spent a decade in the National Security Agency as an analyst and counterintelligence officer. John, how unusual is it to have a spy, an asset, with this kind of access to high levels of government in an enemy state?
It's rare enough, certainly in a country like Russia, which has a great deal of counterintelligence vigilance. It's a rare and welcome thing for Western intelligence to have a mole with some access at the pretty high levels of the Kremlin.
How do you go about recruiting people like this, and why do they betray their country?
It's extraordinarily difficult, and we have learned that the individual named by the Russian press as the alleged mole served in the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. over a decade ago, which is not uncommon. It is easier for U.S. intelligence to recruit Russian spies when they're in the United States than when they're in Russia, obviously, because when you're in Russia, the FSB, the Russian Domestic Security Agency, watches U.S. diplomats and suspected spies very closely. So I wouldn't be surprised to find out that our alleged mole was actually recruited when he was serving in Washington, D.C.
And what kind of risks would he have faced in a country like Russia once back there and spying?
Oh, enormous risks. If you're caught, you will be going to prison, potentially shot. Your life is over. Your family's life will be ruined. As President Vladimir Putin, the former KGB man, has said, traitors always end badly. He's not joking. So the consequences for him, had he not been exfiltrated, would have been extraordinarily severe. And of course, it's very difficult for U.S. intelligence to run Russian agents inside Russia as well, because, again, the FSB is watching everything.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, Putin's personal security is really rigorous. How do spies pass information to their handlers? How do they actually communicate?
There are many ways they can do it. The most common way in Russia and in high threat states is using what are called dead drops, meaning you leave microfilm or a thumb drive behind where a Western intelligence service knows to find it, and you can communicate that way. So there are no face-to-face meetings. Those are simply too risky for everyone involved.
Yeah, with no face-to-face meetings, it can get hard to assess trust. How do you know you can trust this kind of asset from afar? How do you vet the information that he or she provides?
It's extraordinarily difficult in practice, of course. Had he been recruited when he was in the United States, U.S. intelligence would have no doubt had face-to-face meetings with him. But those would probably disappear when he went back to Russia, and that is always the challenge, isn't it? The Russians are very adept at counterintelligence, and even if he was legitimate when he was recruited by U.S. intelligence, he might have been flipped or turned by the FSB, and you can never really be entirely sure. You have to assess it on the basis of the information he's passing you. Does that appear to be legitimate, bona fide? The Russians are masters of what's called disinformation, meaning they could pass you information that's 80% true but 20% false to influence Western decision-making in key areas. So it's the answer is you can never really be 100% sure.
And then how do you get somebody like this out of Russia? And do you have to get the whole family out at the same time?
Yes, and that's the challenge as well. These individuals obviously don't want to defect without their families because the fate of their families could be very grim. And if the press reports are to be believed, the Russian press has told us that that the family disappeared while allegedly taking a trip to Montenegro in July of 2017. So the whole family was able to escape.
So the risk obviously doesn't end with the extraction. What kind of risk does this man and his family face today?
Well, enormous risks. You've had the case of Sergei Skripal, of course, in England, in Salisbury, poisoned last year along with his daughter, a defector from Russian military intelligence. We had Mikhail Lesin, the founder of RT, who died under mysterious circumstances, to put it kindly, in Washington, D.C. in November 2015. Putin has made it clear that defectors may be hunted down abroad. And what is very mysterious about this case is the individual named in the Russian press as the suspect has been living in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. under his own name, which is extraordinarily unusual and would seem to indicate he has a death wish. So I think there still have to be some questions about what's really going on here.
So now that this asset we know is out, how much of a hole does that leave in Washington's ability to get good intelligence about what Russia is up to?
Well, this is the paradox, isn't it? When you have a golden source, you want that source to stay in place as long as possible, as long as he doesn't get killed, captured, whatever. No doubt there's a big gap here. It is, again, extremely difficult for U.S. intelligence to recruit and run effectively spies literally inside the Kremlin, especially individuals with high-level access. That's what you want. People will understand the actual decision-making in Putin's inner circle in any way at all. That's just valuable beyond price for U.S. intelligence. And I suspect that if we filled that gap since then we've had a lucky break.
John Schindler is a former counterintelligence officer with the NSA. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.